All right, good morning. I will call to order the regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting for this Tuesday, July 30th, 2013, and would ask if everybody would please join the board in honoring America as we start with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, first item on the agenda is public comment number one. This is intended as a place for members of the public to comment on items on today's agenda. The only thing I would ask is if we're going to talk about the Mud Creek manure management plan, we'll hold that until part of the discussion and let everybody who wants to speak come up at that time. So if anybody has anything other than that they'd like to address the board on, now would be the time. Seeing no one moving the microphone, we'll move on to consideration of minutes, and these are the July 16th minutes.
Move approval.
Second.
Motion and a second. Further discussion? Clinton?
Aye.
Toot?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Minutes pass. Consideration of personnel actions. We have one correction. Brittany Harriman was listed at $10.85 an hour. It's really $10.99. an hour. Other than that change, everything is as listed.
Move approval with the personnel action as amended.
Second.
Further discussion? Clinton?
Aye.
Toot?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Personnel actions pass. Consideration of claims for August 1st.
Under a million.
Move approval.
Well under.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Further discussion? Toot?
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Claims pass. Consent agenda, board, as prerogative of the chair, I'd like to pull item number Roman numeral 3 under the consent agenda, which is consideration of the FY14 provider and program participation agreement with Story County Community Life Program for discussion. We also have an added road closure, 1401, and added utility permit, 1402.
I'll move approval with the noted changes.
I'll second.
Motion and a second. Toot?
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Consent agenda passes. That leads us to number three, Roman numeral number three, consideration of the FY14 provider and program participation agreement with Story County CLP. And Ron, I know you're here somewhere. I'd ask you to come up. Just because I think we've got one error of something that came through that wasn't supposed to, and I was hoping you'd address that for us.
Sure. Just real quickly, one of the – let me find it here. The jail diversion intensive case manager position no longer exists, so we would ask that that be removed from the list of items on our contract that was just left over from last year.
So just a clerical error, the paperwork got sent through.
Okay. Yeah.
So everything else with the exception of jail diversion.
Okay.
So thank you, Ron.
Okay. That's a simple request to move that. My question, was there one other one I think that you had mentioned or no? So I would entertain a motion to approve the request to remove remove the jail diversion intensive care management proposal that is submitted here in the proposal.
I'll second that.
Further discussion? Clinton?
Aye.
Toot?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Passes with that one noted change.
Rest of it set to go.
Rest of it all set.
All set to go.
Moving through, I have a feeling we're going to slow down here in a minute. Number eight, public hearing items. We have none. Number nine, here we go. Additional items. First item on the agenda is acknowledgement of application of new manure management plan and construction design statement for Mud Creek Feeders, LLC, Section 35 of Collins Township. Here's the way we're going to go through this. We're going to start with Margaret Janes, our environmental health director. And she's going to take us through. Margaret, I would ask that you start with a refresher for this board and the public on what the board's role, the Board of Supervisors' role is in this. Once Margaret finishes, I know that we have a representative from Mud Creek Feeders here. I'll ask if they have any interest in speaking. Once they're finished speaking, we'll go to the request we have here. I would ask that you limit yourself to about 2 minutes, and then if you need to come back after everybody's had a chance to speak, we'll do that, and we'll go through this in the best, most orderly process we can. With that, Margaret Janes.
Okay. In a minute here.
All right.
I'm sorry. Let's see. I'm looking for my iDrive.
I'll get the light.
Okay. I have that. I apologize. I cannot find.
That sounded like my wife this morning. I'll take care of that.
That's not a disc. This is a drive. Let's try that one.
I think it is the disc.
It is the disc. Yeah, okay, the even though it's a removable.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
You're right. Okay, so 2013.
Charlie, I don't know why for the first time my laptop is not allowing me to actually completely load the packet. This file has a lot in here.
Yeah. Okay. My name is Margaret Janes. I'm the director of the Story County Environmental Health Department. I put together just a few slides just to bring everybody up to speed on what has been proposed for this site. The name of the facility is Mud Creek Feeders, LLC, owned by Kyle Menz. The proposal is for 2,480 feeder swine. There will be one building with a buried manure pit beneath it. There will be 992 animal unit capacity, and the way you come up with that is a formula so that you can compare apples to apples, so you're comparing swine with cattle. So that's why the animal unit capacity is lower than the number of actual animals. Because it's below 1,000, there will not be a master matrix required by the DNR. This is the site. Matt Corey developed this map for me. He also posted it on the bulletin board over there if you would like to take a closer look at it. The smallest circle is the 1,250 feet that you cannot build confinement in if there's a residence located within that circle unless you receive permission from that property owner. The red circle is 1 mile and the outer ring is 2 miles. As you can see, it is located on the Jasper County line. So a lot of this information just kind of dead ends right where the county line is as far as our records go. So wells and things like that, we do not have the information for other counties. I'm sorry, one other thing. The dark hatch mark, that is where the manure management the manure application sites are. So there's basically two main sites, one just west of the town up there, and then two right around the proposed facility. This I copied right out of the application, and it shows the distances to landmarks, so there's no well within 101 feet. They did go ahead and plug several wells down on that site earlier this year, I believe it was. No public use within 2,500 feet, no designated wetlands within 2,500 feet, and no high quality or protected water within 1,000 feet.
Margaret, can I interrupt just for a minute? Question. When you say wells were plugged, hopefully this year, is there a process? Do they have to send notification to your office when that is actually done?
Yes, there's a DNR form that they fill out, and they send that to us, and we process that so we know that they were plugged properly.
Okay, that's what I was curious about. Okay, thank you.
For the manure management, there will be 635,000 gallons produced annually. Spring and fall application is planned. It will be knifed or injected. And there are 387 acres planned for the manure application with a corn-soybean rotation. And I ask that the Interagency Review Committee review these and send comments to me about this proposed CAFO. Engineering said that there are many wood bridges in the area and to not exceed the weight limits on those bridges. Keep that in mind. The assessor said that there are improvements. The improvements would be assessed as ag, and the owner may qualify for pollution control exemption through DNR. Planning said that they need to file a request for ag exemption for construction of the facilities. And my department, they will have to obtain permits for septic and wells. And that's all I have for the review.
Okay. Thank you, Margaret.
Welcome.
With that, I'd ask Civil Attorney Jessica Reynolds to come up and give us a refresher for the board and for the members of the public that are here today on what the county and the Board of Supervisors' role is in hearing this manure management plan.
Well, good morning, everyone. My name is Jessica Reynolds, and I'm an assistant Story County attorney, and I'm the civil attorney for the county. I'm not sure how much experience those in the room have with this issue, but as a little refresher, the Iowa legislature chose to take over the management and regulation and permitting of hog confinement. So that's something that's been taken away from local municipalities by legislation. And so the board's role here today is to receive the applications that have been lodged with Environmental Health and to receive public comment. The board is able to transmit those comments to the Department of Natural Resources and also to make their own comments to the Department of Natural Resources. But the ultimate decision on the permits and the facility does lie with the Department of Natural Resources. That has legislatively been taken out of county home rule.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions for Jessica before we get started? All right. Margaret, Jessica, thank you very much. First, I would ask if there's anybody from representing Mud Creek Feeders, LLC, who would like to address the board and the public at this time. You'll have another opportunity at the end if you'd like to wait. So I just ask you yes. Okay. So with that, I'm going to go through these in the order that they were given to me. And the first speaker that we have, and I'll remind you, please keep your comments to about 2 minutes. First person is Brenda Brink. And Brenda, if you would, for the record, just state your address and then, yes, ma'am, sit down right there and welcome.
Thank you.
Just city that you're.
Not the address. Just state your city where you
reside. Oh, city. I don't hear very well. Sorry. I'm Brenda Brink. I'm from Huxley. My comments are going to start with a story. This was this early summer. I was visiting with a colleague where I work in Story City, and I was just saying, isn't this weather great? We can, you know, go out and do things like hang our laundry outside. And this colleague of mine who lives in Stanhope said, oh, can't do that anymore. She says, in Stanhope, we have factory farms on three sides of me. I live in Stanhope, and there are factory farms, and I cannot hang my laundry anymore. Well, that sounds like a little thing, doesn't it? But what do we have in Iowa? We have quality of life. We have quality of life in Iowa. We don't have mountains. We don't have oceans. We don't have a lot of things, but we have quality of life. So there's air quality problems from these large hog confinements. What about water? The EPA has already said the DNR is not doing its job. The DNR has said that the DNR is not doing its job. So my point is that as a citizen of Story County, I've lived here over 25 years, is that we deserve to have our public officials, the people we have elected to protect the public trust, take care of our water, take care of our air, and we need some backbone from the people on the ground here to say, this isn't right. This isn't right that unregulated industry is ruining quality of life, property values. It's not right. So the elected officials need to start doing something to make sure that their their electorate is protected. The EPA has said these are unregulated. And we're going to allow more into Story County? They're unregulated. There's not enough inspectors. Kansas has all of theirs inspected. And in Iowa, apparently we're second-class citizens. So there's not enough inspectors. It's unregulated. And the pollution is a problem. The EPA has said so, and we all know so. So I am saying it's time to put a moratorium on any more here. I don't see any reason why you can't put a moratorium on it. And that's what I'm urging you to do. Thank you.
Thank you, Brenda. Other than state law would be the thing that would keep the three of us from putting a moratorium on it, but really appreciate your comments. Next is Evan Berger. Hi, Evan.
Morning. Evan Berger, born and raised in Huxley. Now, I don't live next to this thing. I'm not going to have to deal with it every day. We're going to hear from a lot of folks who will have to deal with this thing if it's built every single day that they're on their property unless they get driven out of the county. So I'll leave those stories to those folks. I just have a couple words to say. Now, do you all have copies of the manure management plan at hand? Or okay. Just a couple things. Now, again, the purpose of this document is to share with the public some very important information about this plan. You know, where the manure is going to be spread, who owns the facility, very basic information like that. And this particular manure management plan that we have before us fails in all those regards. It's filled with kind of sloppy information that really just disrespects the entire process of the manure management plan, sharing that information with the county and the DNR. Just a couple points. If you turn to the last page of the construction design supplement, or what's the statement, construction design statement, you'll see that the name of the operation here is listed as KKM Farms LLC. Now, throughout the rest of the manure management plan, it's listed as Mud Creek Feeders. So this is one of those, you know, it's a very basic thing where the paperwork needs to be filled out correctly in order to be counted as accurate. So that's just you know, we could count that as a very unimportant mistake, you know, something that could be corrected. But the bigger problem comes on the year-by-year manure management plan summary. So it's this chart of which fields the manure will be spread on. I think there's six of them listed here. If you guys can pull that up. And this is towards the middle of a packet there. Now, if you take a look at this, we have six fields. Two of them are listed as owned by Kyle Menz, by Mud Creek Feeders, and the other four are listed as rented. Now, as far as the assessor can tell, Kyle Menz does not own those two fields. So here we have a problem where, again, the information is just correct. And this is, again, a key piece of the reason why this manure management plan is required by law, to list which fields are being applied, how that agreement has been set out. And even for the rest of the four, it sounds to me, from what the information we can find from the assessor and from local folks, the four properties listed as rented, there isn't a current lease on those. You'll see that the other option up at the top is own, rent, or agreement. And it sounds, you know, if Kyle Menz has an agreement with the landowner, he needs to write agreement rather than rent. So again, this entire section of the manure management plan, which in my mind is really the most important section, where the manure is going to be spread, you know, the smell is actually going to be not just concentrated around the site itself, but also on these fields when it's being spread. You know, so it's of the utmost importance that everything's perfectly accurate here and in this document. As far as I can tell, it's almost completely inaccurate. So as far as what you all can do today, as the attorney mentioned, you know, you have the ability to forward comments along to the DNR, as well as all the comments that will be made today. I would urge you to let the DNR know that this document is incorrect. It's inaccurate. It needs to be resubmitted with all the accurate information, all of those mistakes corrected, and we can take a look at it again and make sure that that it actually reflects the plan in its entirety. And you know, as elected officials, you do have that power, and as elected officials, you do have some say with the DNR. You know, they do listen to you all. So I would urge you to do that. The other request, demand, however you want to put it, that I think a lot of us have here today is for a public hearing in a larger setting, closer to the actual site. So you know, Tuesday mornings, I know that's when you all have your meetings every week. You know, it's hard to reschedule things for like evenings or that sort of thing. But you know, a lot of folks were not able to be here today. They were not able to have their voices heard in this process. And I think if we had something on an evening, even if it's during the week, a lot more people who are going to be affected by this will be able to come out. And especially if we're held in, you know, the town of Collins or something, where you know, they will be affected by this odor, and we can have their voices heard in the process as well. So. Unfortunately, the timeline on this is pretty short, so I think it'd be great if something like this was set up for the next 7 days, in the next week, something like that, just because the 30-day timeline that you all are working with here. Any quick questions?
Question, yeah. Kevin, is that you referenced a portion in the document. Would you make sure you highlight that information so when we gather all the documents and notes and information that we'll receive today, that we can be specific in forwarding that information?
Certainly, and I can give that to the clerk later on today? Okay.
Right.
Very good.
Good.
Evan, thank you.
Yep.
Next, we have Jack Troger. Morning, Jack.
Morning. I speak for Earth. Well, it's whack-a-mole game again. I love playing the whack-a-mole game. I could whack-a-mole day and night. I see a mole is out and about in Story County looking to set up another manure factory. This time he's going to pop up and surprise all of his surrounding neighbors with a gift that just keeps on giving all year round, year after year after year. This mole surely sees himself as a good American, a good free market entrepreneur, but his neighbors and others see him more clearly. An entrepreneur. That ugly old mole just doesn't get it, that it should stay in its mole hole. Moles are plentiful all over the United States of America. They're busy digging, drilling, degrading, fracking, contaminating, poisoning, and polluting. Undermining what little is left of America's democracy, unwilling to recognize that the Farm Bureau is feeding the world, poisoning the world. Mantra is not sustainable, it's not viable, it's not credible, it's no longer tenable. The moles don't get it. So the rest of us must constantly stand up and whack away at the moles, whacking and hammering. In my case, jackhammering. Until they get the message, and I will. I brought a visual aid for the supervisors today, if you will. It's an aid to help you remember my words. Every time another mole pops up, you can use it to whack it and protect our water, our air, our food, our health, our lives. It's a whack-a-mole mallet. I'd have brought a real one, but I was a little afeard that the folks from another part of the building might have seen it as a weapon, which is what real hog factories really are, weapons. Thank you so much for your
time. Jack.
Thank you, Jack.
Next, I believe I have Scott and Jana Jones. Good morning.
Scott and Janet Jones. We live at 72563 340th Street.
Which is real close to where it's going to be.
Which is right there.
Yep.
Okay. Right next to the field he's going to spread. He's 2,200 feet from my house. Okay. I'll hear them hogs every day, every night.
Smell the hogs every day, every night.
Every night. When it rains hard, all this here runs down through here, through my yard, where me and my kids and I play. Okay?
There's an old fence line that used to run there, so when it does flood, it comes right through that area. So it's.
If you look in the mile circle around where this thing is going to be built, just on the Story County side, because I didn't do the back, or Jasper County side, I estimate it's roughly $1.8 million in retail or real estate, personal housing. Okay? The minute that they pour footings for that thing, that drops 30 to 40%. Okay? I'll expect my property taxes to go down. And I won't be there. I mean, I'm not going to live with that. It's just, you know. And people in town, and you guys, well, there's nothing we can do. Come on. Right, you're Story County Supervisor, right? You can't do nothing. Then, frankly, what do we pay you for? Really, I mean, that's all I got.
I think that a lot of it too is just that the effects. I mean, you look at the one that sits up here on Highway 30. We just went around that bend from Colo last night. You can smell it clear out of town. And it's not going to just affect, like I said, a few of us that live around, which is going to be the worst, but it's going to affect the whole area. And you see all the people in the room. There's people here with young kids that just moved in the area because they wanted to live out in the country. They wanted to raise their kids in the country. They didn't want to raise it by a hog confinement. They want their kids to be able to go outside and play during the day, you know, and enjoy that kind of stuff. And we still have kids that are in school. We have for the next 7 years. So we plan on being there for a while because we like the school system. We want to stay. We were brought to the area because of where my husband works. So we're here as implants, but we came here because it's beautiful out there, and we wanted to stay that way. The other thing that I have a problem with is I have nothing against family farms. That's what made this America. It's the corporate farms that come in. And I don't even know how much this gentleman's going to make out of this, but it sounds like me that he's not going to be making the money. It's some big corporate company that's going to be making all the money where they haul the hogs in and out on his property. So, you know, that's the thing that worries us the most is our kids. We want to make sure that they're safe. They can go outside. Like she said, hang your line out. Be outside all day. We love being outside. I mean, we have four-wheelers. Our neighbors have campsites that we camp at. So that's what's important to us. So.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next, I have Jim Lunan. Thanks, Margaret.
You're welcome.
My name is Jim Lunan. I live, by the way, the crow flies probably about 5/8 of a mile from that site, right next to the Joneses here. Okay. Anyway. 11 years ago, my wife and I decided we wanted to move back into the country. We both grew up in the country, and we wanted to get back to those roots. We were both working at Hubbard Radcliffe School at the time, and so we thought, well, we'll look around up in Hardin County and see if we can find a place to build a house. You can't go anywhere in Hardin County and not spit onto a hog confinement. You enter the county and you can smell the county. Okay? That was our deciding factor not to build in Hardin County. I hope your goal is not to make Story County a Hardin County Junior. The reputation they have is terrible. You have a vote. Okay? You say you don't have the authority to do anything. Stand up. Okay? You need to stand up and say, this is enough. Iowa does not need these factory farms. We need more of the family farms. Okay? The DNR says we don't have the authority. That's the county's authority. I talked to a DNR guy not very long ago.
Tell me what he said.
He just says the county has the authority to put a stop to this.
He's incorrect, sir.
Well,
Jessica, I just look at you. What? Tell me again. I mean, I want to be clear on this because I mean, there is no doubt that sitting here as county supervisors, we have a megaphone, and we can choose to use that megaphone collectively or individually as we see fit.
But I would suggest, why don't you stand up to the state and say, we want to have a say in what happens in our county.
Yes.
Okay? You get the balls to say, this county is going to be different.
May I interject before Jessica speaks just a minute? Mr. Lohr, I think it's Jim, I believe.
Yep.
I serve on the Iowa Association of County Supervisors affiliate. Currently, right now, I'm the chair of this. 3 years ago, when we began to see an expansion of hog confinements in Story County, you know, I brought this topic again to the supervisors statewide. Also, it was discussed at our spring and fall school. We had a panel and group talking relative about this. We've also engaged our local legislators and others on trying to address this topic. And the bottom line, basically, is the way the legislation is right now, there have been a few counties that attempted to put a moratorium in place, which had no effect whatsoever. Because of the statutes that are in place that are set by the DNR.
But if enough counties do that, maybe something will happen.
I'm going to point out again, the process that we now have is that we took some action here a couple years ago, last year, recognizing that even with the manure management plan that was submitted, if it was less than what the threshold should be, we needed to allow citizen input so that we could gather as much of the information and documentation to present to the DNR so that they can see what the feelings of the residents that are impacted by these decisions are going to be made. And we have tried to do that and be within the guidelines and the rules that are there.
So what's the purpose of you guys even voting?
I will also tell you this. County supervisors statewide don't really want local control. When you think of what local control might mean, we have local control in a lot of areas, but local control does not necessarily mean that we can escape the law and not live by the confines of what is handed down to us from state legislature. So we have an awful lot of supervisors who farm themselves, who are hog confinements, cow confinements, and so forth. So this is a topic that has been discussed. We are maybe going to make some small tweaks. One of the questions that I raised and asked for is to allow counties to work with the DNR for the actual inspection and making certain that when they are spreading the manure, that we have the ability to go out and make sure that they are doing it according to what they say they were going to do.
That's not happening.
And that is not happening. They have not given us that authority. But to me, that is about the one step locally that the legislature could do that would help citizens address some of their concerns. Will it stop it? I don't think so. But that's just to let you know, this is not something that we have just dismissed. But we really believe that we need to share the voices of the citizens and take and stay within the letters of the law in terms of what our duties and responsibilities are.
Okay, when you were elected, did you take an oath?
Yes, I did.
And did that say something that you should serve and protect the people of your county?
I can't remember the exact words.
Sure. Yeah, but it also says.
That's what it says.
It also that we would obey the federal and state laws.
But you're supposed to look out after the people of this county. That is your primary duty.
And I believe that's what we've done since I've been on this board. I mean, you may not agree with those decisions.
Okay, and I just step in here and I just say one point that Wayne made that I want to underscore. This board, the three of us, made the decision about a year ago to go over and above what's required, a practice that most counties do not undertake, which is making sure, Margaret, how far is it, making sure we notify every property owner within 2 miles.
Did not do that.
Margaret, did we do that or not in this
case? No.
What? Within Story County. We're not responsible.
Jasper County, don't care. You don't care about Jasper County people. You don't care about people within that 2 mile radius.
Our authority stops at that county line. And when it comes to hog confinement or any kind of confinement, we have very limited authority based on the state law right now. Jessica, there's some assertions being made here that somehow we can stand up and stop this thing. Is there a way for the Board of Supervisors to step up and stop?
We're not here to approve this. The only thing that we can do is acknowledge receipt.
You get a vote on it.
No, we don't.
No, we don't.
We can vote to acknowledge it, and that's all we can.
That's all. That's what you're voting on. Can you deny that? Can you vote no?
How can we not acknowledge something that's laid in front of
us?
There's six.
You can vote. You can vote to not accept that.
Offices in Iowa. The only reason these come to the local level is for a convenience for the producers, so they don't have to drive 100 miles to a local field office to submit this manure management plan. It comes to the
county. Why do you vote?
We don't vote. We vote to acknowledge it.
And you're voting. You're voting to acknowledge.
Not receipt of it.
So vote to deny it.
We can't deny it. All we can
Fine.
Do, how can I deny something that's been laid in front of me, it's been filled out and signed?
All just say no.
Forward this and send it to the DNR.
Just vote no. I don't want to accept this.
We're prohibited by law to pass any type of ordinance or zoning ordinance or anything.
So what's the point of even voting on it?
We're voting to acknowledge the receipt of it.
I believe the point is to give you and everybody else in this room an opportunity to come express your thoughts, to give us an opportunity to express our thoughts and pass those on to the DNR.
I have 66 people here that in this petition that say we don't want this thing, okay? And you have that. You can vote and say, no, we don't want to accept this.
Jessica, can
you can.
Well, unfortunately, the state has taken that authority from this board, and we are just the receptacle for the permits.
Because everybody denies. Everybody denies they have the authority to do it.
Well, I'd be happy to talk with anyone from the DNR.
I hope you do.
I've talked to their legal
counsel. I certainly
hope
you do.
There is a very explicit statute.
Yeah.
This has all been, at a state level, taken away from counties, and really that's where the legislative six for what you're discussing here today, that's something for you all to consider, because counties have been stripped of that authority. And so this board is here to receive your comments, pass them along, pass along their own comments to the state. But that home rule authority that we enjoy in so many local issues has been taken legislatively away from the county.
Well, of our rights. That takes away our rights. Okay? And I hope if you vote to accept this document or whatever you're voting to do, I hope that weighs on your conscience the rest of your life. I hope you think about that 20 years from now and say, I could have stopped that. Thank you.
Next, I have Rachel Woods. Absolutely.
You forgot to put my name on the card.
Please introduce yourself.
He just wanted the chance to really introduce you and make you feel important.
I'm Rachel Woods from Collins, Iowa.
Matt Woods, same residence.
We're both born and raised in Iowa, and that's where our heart's at. It's where we want to live. It's where we choose to live as young citizens. This is where we want to be. I've grown up on lakes and streams and rivers. I love to kayak. Water quality is a big concern of mine. I'd really like to keep the streams clean so that I can continue my recreational activities. But beyond that, we are within the red circle, our residents. Our property values are going to be incredibly affected by this. And as a young couple, we've put our life savings into this residence, and this is where we want to raise our family. As an expecting mother, I do not want this air pollution affecting my children's health, my own health, our family's health. We also run a small community supported agriculture there where we have 10 members that we grow produce for. That's going to be affected by that as well. It's just going to affect us on every single day. And my plea to you is to really take this to the DNR and consider how many people are in on this map. You know, Jasper County residents, the Marshall County residents, Story County residents, everybody. Thank you.
And congratulations.
Thank you.
Thanks. Well, surprisingly, I agree with everything my wife said.
That means you get to stay at the same residence.
That's right. So I get to sleep inside. And, you know, I grew up in the city of Des Moines. I spent my first 30 years in Des Moines in town. And I spent a good portion of my life to get to the point where I could live my dream of being in a situation that I'm in now. It's my life savings, everything I worked for to go into this house to get to this point, and to have a farm, that, you know, land that we farm, a place that we live where I can raise my family the way I've dreamed to do my whole life. And I feel like this is going to affect the quality of our life at the least. And, you know, as an expected first-time father, you know, as I'm sure most of you in the room know, when you find that out, your whole priorities change. And it's one thing for me to deal with this, to drive by it and see it, smell it, live with it every day. But the idea of my future child dealing with that makes me sick to my stomach and makes me have to consider, you know, I don't know what I do. We can't afford to move, and this is where we want to be anyway, so I don't want to move. You know, like I said, it took most of my life to get here, and I don't want to go anywhere. So it's a real shame that we have to deal with this, and I hope that through the strength of our neighbors and community that we can get something done about this in some level. And I don't know. That's it. That's all I got to say, I guess. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Yeah, next, I have John Lingling.
Hi, I'm John Lingling. I lived about just inside Jasper County. It would be about just a little bit over a mile from this location. And I just recently moved back to my family farm, who's been in the family for over 100 years. Mike, you know, I urge you guys, you know, you keep saying that you don't have the power, but I urge you guys to put your recommendation in there to vote no, or to strongly word your recommendation against this. If you look at your diagram there, there's over 60 houses in that area. This isn't like a corner of the county that's, you know, not populated. It isn't where there's only like, you know, one house per square mile or something like that. It's a very highly populated area in Story County, and I think everybody who lives in that area, you know, loves their quality of life, concerned about the air quality, and specifically property values in that area. There's at least two houses that are currently on the market for sale there. We hope to have some new people move into there. But I fear that's not going to happen, because they are just across from the, you know, within the 1 mile area. And so they're really going to be hurting because of the property values. So I just, and you keep saying that the state took over approval and stuff. Well, the reason is they took it over because then they can get influence from the state and the big factory farmers and organizations, and you know that. If it was local control, you know, you have the control locally, then you can get people like us, and you would listen to us, and you would have to, you know, report to your constituents. When it's taken out of your hands and put into state control, we know the control is in the factory farms. So I just urge you to strongly not recommend this.
Thank you. Juanita Lunan. Good morning.
Good morning. We live on the Jasper County side, but we are very close to that. We're across the road from the Joneses. We moved out there after we had issues with Hardin County and all of their hog confinements. And we planned on, Jim and I are both within a few years of retirement. We were planning on property being part of our retirement plan. And if this goes down, you know, the property goes down, it affects us. I also have children, that grandchildren that have asthma issues. We don't need the health problems that factory farms bring. We have no issues whatsoever with family farms. We have cattle on three sides of us. You know, our neighbors have cattle. We have no problems with that. But the problem with factory farms is the manure issues are totally different than they are in a family farm. You have cattle and you have pigs out in lots or out in the outside. And yeah, you have the odors, but they are nothing compared to what they are with factory farms. The whole composition of the manure changes and it becomes more toxic. And we don't need that. None of us need that. And it will affect our water because there's little creeks and it'll run out of the fields and it will run into the little creeks, which in turn runs down to Indian Creek, which is bigger, which in turn ends up in Des Moines River or wherever. And so we don't need that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Sue Lomp. Good morning, Sue.
Good morning. I currently live in Ankeny, Iowa. I just recently moved from my family farm, so that my son and his wife, who are expecting their first child, can go on from the next generation. I am a sister to John Lingling. I grew up a mile and a half away. That farm has been in my family's for five generations. Both of my grandparents are family farmers. My father was a family farmer and raised cattle. My husband farmed, and my son now is wanting to have a cow-calf herd. Our lifestyle there is wonderful. We have a timber, we have a pond, we have camping. People in this area love the quality of life. We have a garden there. Where our food comes from is very important. I personally make a conscious choice of buying my meat directly from someone that I know, and not factory produced. My concerns are the quality of life for the residents in this area. Specifically, I'm very protective of my family and our farm, but it's a bigger issue than just us. It's the people in the southeastern part of Storey County. It's the people of the northwestern part of Jasper County. It's the town of Collins, the town of Maxwell. It's in the watershed. You talked about Mud Creek, Indian Creek, Wolf Creek. It's much bigger than that. I have a concern for the property values. As it's mentioned, there are new people coming into the area, which is very exciting. There are homes for sale. Who's going to want to buy that? Who are the people that live there? Are they going to want to add on to their houses? I have a concern for the quality of air. Some questions I have is, you know, where are these hogs coming from? Is it backed by a large corporation? If it's rented land that they're putting the manure on, what happens if that lease is gone? What happens in 5 years, 10 years, when they decide not to have that anymore? And is it going to be an empty building and everything? And with the property values going down, it's a huge concern. As citizens of the earth, we have a responsibility to take care of the earth. Native Americans have looked at that, and their philosophy is to take and look ahead for seven generations. And I'm asking you to look ahead for seven generations. We're going to be gone, but our land is going to be here, our water is going to be here, our air is going to be here, and hopefully we'll have generations of responsible people. As supervisors, if this is something that you wouldn't want in your area, please, I ask that you do what you can to help in any way to stop factory farms in this area. I have a better understanding of the lack of things that you can do and who is more responsible, and I think that part is very good that, you know, as citizens, we are becoming more informed and that we can contact our legislators, that we can contact the DNR. But I'm really begging you to look at and listen to everybody and to do whatever it is that you can to help the quality of life for the residents in this area and the state of Iowa. So thank you very much.
Lou, thank you very much. Next I have, I think, Deborah Ponca. Thank you.
Hi, I live in Ames, and this summer I've been traveling all around Iowa to different farmers markets and talking to people about clean water and factory farms. And I can tell you that the majority, vast majority of people that I've spoken with this summer in Davenport, in Iowa City, in Ames, in Woodward, are not happy with what's going on in this state. Now, you say that you have no political control over this, but where do we go? We have a DNR, and I've spoken with Troutman, I've spoken with Gipp, I spoke with Eam. Where do we go? They've been politicized beyond recognition. Now, we all know DNR workers, they go in very idealistic, so it's not a beef that I have with people on the ground. It's the top tiers have been politicized and the budgets have been slashed. And currently we have over 8,000 factory farms in this state and we have 7 inspectors. So that, now they've said they're going to hire a few more to bring that number up to 13, but if you do the math, you can see that it is impossible that all factory farms will be inspected and manure management plans upheld. It's impossible. So what do we have here? You know, will this be inspected? Will it be just another case of voluntary compliance, which we know, we absolutely know does not work? We have an EPC, the final say, the Environmental Protection Commission. They have the very final say on whether a plan is approved. And what about those guys? Well, you have those members on that commission. There's not a single one of those members sitting on that commission who does not have ties directly to factory farm industry or commodity groups or Farm Bureau. What hope do we have left? Who do we turn to? Everybody's bought and paid for, so we're here today. And there are over 20 million hogs in the state right now. For 3 million people, that's 7 million hogs per person. Our water quality, we're currently 49th out of 50th in this country in terms of the number of impaired waterways. Only Mississippi is worse than us, and we're sending our pollution down to the Gulf. So we're helping them out. What do we do? Where do we go? You are our last hope. You are here. And you say, well, you don't have the power to do a moratorium, but you have the power to make at least symbolic moves. And a moratorium would be a symbolic move. Even if it didn't have any legislative clout, it would be a huge symbolic move to say that we value the quality of life in our county, that we hear what people like these folks are saying, and that we respect their right to have a decent quality of life. And I would urge you to frame the argument a little differently, too. Right now, it's portrayed as family farms versus factory farms, when in fact, factory farms are not farms, they're factories. Family farmers have farms. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Deb Mitchell is next.
Good morning. I'm Deb Mitchell from
rural Collins, and we're within the 2 miles. And I just wanted to express my concerns, like everyone else, about the quality of life out there, how it is now, and how it quite possibly could drastically change. We have young grandchildren out there with us quite often. A couple of them have pulmonary problems. We're concerned about the air quality, how that's going to affect. I know there's several neighbors in our area that have also considered making additions to enjoy the outdoors, the fresh air that we have out there. Those plans now are on hold for at least 3 of us. We are concerned about it. As some of the other speakers have noted, family farms are the backbone of this country. I work for and with the farmers every day as an employee of the Farm Service Agency. I have nothing against any of that. That is, you know, supporting my lifestyle also. The corporate farming, so-called farming, is a concern. The air, the quality, the tax, you know, changes that may come about, they're all valid concerns. That one thing that I don't know has been totally addressed, what kind of extra traffic will be on our roads from this. I know there are regulations where weight limits are supposed to be valued. I know in other certain situations we have semis and everything going up and down those roads, which they are allowed to be on the roads. But there needs to be some caution for the residents of that area. That is not always happening. And I'm just afraid if you get corporate information or corporate people in there working a little more, that might be a bigger concern, especially for those with families and animals, that type of thing. We just would like to be heard, like to be acknowledged that we do have valid concerns. And also, please know, we are in a farming community. We realize that. Family farming is different than corporate. Thank you.
Thank you. I believe it's Marilyn Wilson. Well, Marilyn and other... Good morning.
I'm Jim.
Hi, Jim.
Jimmy, better known as Jimmy Wilson. We came to find out about the family farms by a neighbor, Bob and May Smith. My husband seen the sign as he was driving to town for morning coffee. And he brought this home to me, and I wondered why we didn't get a letter. We're within 3/4 of a mile of the hog confinement in Jasper County. And I decided to go and seek out my neighbors to know how many had received any kind of acknowledgement out of Story County, and there was none. And there's 20 farms and households represented within a 2-mile radius of the hog confinement building. My husband said, well, maybe we better go to Jasper County and see what we can find out. And we went and we seen Kevin Lueters, Environmental Health, because I have health problems and so does my husband. We're the oldest in our neighborhood. The rest of the neighbors are all young generations. And we finally got a referral to Larry Ryan, Jasper County Planning and Zoning, and he did help us by giving us information on who to call. And I made copies of that, and we went around and gave each one of our neighbors a copy of that and also a copy of the letter from Story County. I have health issues. We're concerned that this farm was pattern tiled heavily for agricultural
purposes,
and that the runoff would be bad. And there is a lot of watershed comes down through this farm. And there's a farm owned by Jim Wright of Story County. that takes a lot of runoff from this, and this has to go on down through the Frevert and Mann's lands. We also don't know how large of acreage Kyle Mann has there. And we also were concerned about rural water. This hog confinement will use a lot of rural water. And we get our water from Collins, even though we're in Jasper County. Who's going to pay for larger lines into Jasper County and Story County if this thing goes through and the water isn't sufficient to our homes? We also contacted the county attorney and never heard anything back from him, but Larry Ryan was very good in helping us.
County attorney in Jasper or county attorney in Story?
Jasper.
Okay.
Jasper. We went around and got the names of all the 20 homes that are affected just on a tablet. And we met some new neighbors that we had not met before. And everybody that we talked to was against the family hog operation that is going in. We then decided that we would talk to a neighbor in Story County, and we did, and that was, help me, your name?
Steve
Chipton. Steve Chipton. And we decided that we ought to do something, and we took Jasper County, and he took Story County. I was able to contact everyone in Jasper County except one gentleman's home, and he works away from home. Sometimes he's gone for 2 weeks at a time, and we just never could catch him. And the other gal that did not sign the petition was
away on a funeral,
and she didn't come to the meeting last night, so I did not get her signature on a petition. But otherwise, they're all represented. And these are new homes, some homes that have been established for five generations. In fact, on that short lane, or road as it would be, there is four families. Paul Lingling is one of the original ones living there. His folks lived there for years. John Lingling and... I can't think of the...
You got me now.
Mark Long. And we feel like the quality of our lives are going to be greatly.
I just have one question.
Sure, Jim.
Story County sent out a letter to everybody in Story County. How do you stop the pollution, the flies, and the stink at the county line?
We don't. We just... Well, our authority stops at the county line.
The impression we get with this two-mile radius, and the county line running through it, that everything stopped at the county line.
Yeah, and I'm sorry for that impression. Just it's a new policy that we put in place about a year ago, actually triggered from another
request
operation. And at that point, we weren't notifying anybody of anything, and we didn't feel like that was right, and so we instituted this two-mile, but we only instituted it for Story County. So our apologies, but we keep batting back and forth what kind of authority the Board of Supervisors has. We have limited authority within Story County when it comes to manure management plans. We have no authority at all when you come to Jasper County or Marshall County.
Well, we outside of Larry Ryan, we received no help in Jasper County.
I'm sorry to hear that.
I feel like this is...
They kind of refer to it as a Story County project. Therefore, they have no say on it. However, the pollution will end up in Jasper County and farther south. We got a problem, you know. And I could call the DNR. They kind of point the finger at you guys. And you guys point your finger at the DNR. Now, here we sit. Somebody's got to take responsibility.
Well, I guess I would wish that the people that you contact, if when you do that and they tell us that, would you ask them for their name and phone number so that then we can follow up with a conversation and ask them exactly what it did they say that we as a county supervisor.
I talked to Jeff Thibault. Is that his name? That's one. I talked to Mr. Gibbons, Bill Gibbons. That would be two.
Please leave those two names
and
we will follow up with a conversation to them.
Mm-hmm. Jim called the representatives in our county. We got an answering service. They never did return a call. He said, go to your government for help. Well, we received no help. I feel like it's government without equal representation. They had a sign posted on the man's land. And as we went to the doctor's office on Monday, the 21st, the sign laid down in the grass. We had a wind that night. And we went to the doctor's office Monday, and the sign was still in the ditch. This morning, the sign was up. Now, there's a lot of people didn't get a chance to see the sign. It looked like to me, if you're interested in promoting something, it ought to have been stationary sign. I'm sure, though, wind had something to do with it, but I felt like Mr. Menz had a responsibility to look after the sign since he was promoting this hog confinement setup.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate your comments. John Hilgerson.
Geezer's got to get comfortable, and then I can start.
Well, good morning.
Good morning, John.
Several years ago, I served on a cross-section committee here in Story County to investigate issues dealing with air quality, land use, urban sprawl, water quality, and so forth. And it was largely funded by the Wallace Foundation. And we did extensive background research individually. We also made a tour, several of us, in a committee of factory farms that were then available in Hardin County and part of Hamilton County. I specifically remember a couple of examples where we pulled up to these factory farms, presented our credentials, and asked to look over the operation. All of a sudden, another man came out in a Jeep in a big hurry, and he ordered us off of the site. And we said, why? We have valid credentials to look at this property. And the man said, we cannot allow you in for health reasons. Notice what I said. Health reasons. We, after weeks of sessions, we produced an extensive report for the Story County supervisors, for the state legislature, and for the Wallace Foundation, and as far as I know, I never, or members that I know, did not receive a report back from the legislature if they even read our extensive report.
John, when was this?
What?
When was this?
I can't remember the exact year.
I mean, but years ago.
Yeah, it was several years ago.
Thank you.
And finally, I want to say that we strongly came out against the issue of factory farms. We were very interested in water and air quality, land management, resource management, and what could be done to limit urban sprawl. So I am totally against these factory farms, as we were then.
John, thank you very much.
Thank you, John. It's always good to see you.
David, is it good? Gooder? Okay. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having us. David Goodner, CCI member from Des Moines, Iowa. I just wanted to kind of go back over a few things that what the county can do in this situation instead of talking so much about what the county can't do. The first thing you guys can do is make sure that the DNR is aware that there's serious flaws in the manure management plan that require a resubmission of the application. Kyle Menz is claiming that he owns or rents fields that at best he has a custom farming agreement with. The manure management plan specifically states that copies of those agreements, including the dates when they end, need to be included in the file, and they're not. So that information has to be corrected. Also, there's two different owners listed on the application, which is incorrect, and the manure management plan should be rejected until those things are fixed. The second thing you guys could do is hold a public hearing in Collins, Iowa, in the next 7 days. That's something that the DNR and state law specifically allows you to do, even for facilities this size, and it would ensure a full, transparent, public, and democratic process. There's a lot of people from Collins that can make it today, and by having a hearing in their community in the next 7 days, you can ensure that their voices are heard. The third thing you could do is more the informal power the county has. You guys could call Kyle Menz and his lawyer up and ask for a closed-door meeting with him and sit down with him and tell him that nobody in this county wants him, these corporate hogs, or the manure that they cause, and ask him to do the right thing and step back and find something else to do with his life. Each one of you could call him up on the phone personally and say, as county supervisor, I feel compelled to tell you that, you know, my duty and the power of my office, that this is a bad idea. It's going to cause a lot of problems. People don't want it, and people don't want you. Another thing you could do, there's some information that we don't have. Last year when Kyle Menz tried to pull this over near Hickory Grove, he was partnering with an out-of-state corporation called Mashoff Pork. At this time, nobody knows whether Mashoff Pork is still involved or which corporation is supplying the hogs to Kyle Menz. That's information that the public deserves to know, and maybe you guys could help us get access to that information. The fourth thing that you could do, or fifth thing you could do, is you could pass a non-binding resolution formally opposing the site. It's not binding. The DNR doesn't have to follow it word for word, but it would set a very high tone in the public's mind that the county is taking the will of county constituents seriously. So those are four or five, you know, six, whatever, recommendations of ways of things that you guys could do, and I think everybody in this room would really appreciate it if you would do those things.
Yeah,
thank you.
And I appreciate the reminders of a few. The reminders of a few of those, and I would just say a few of them that you mentioned we have in fact done. I know that that Mike Cox, our conservation director, and Jessica, I think you were part of that, went out and visited with Kyle and his family, and I think Kyle had a couple representatives there, and just have talked, not this specific issue, it was another one that he was considering that we talked through. So we do take this really, really seriously, and you know, sometimes I know it's really frustrating when you're talking to a group of people that says, you know what, our powers in this are limited, but I really appreciate you lining out for us exactly where you think we could go in this. So that's all I have as far as people who have filled out forms requesting to speak. At this point, I would ask if there's anybody from Mud Creek feeders that would like to speak to us.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My name is Eldon McAfee. I'm an attorney for Mud Creek Feeders and Kyle Menz. And I just want to start by saying that Kyle has asked me to speak on his behalf. He's been through this process before, and he's asked me to speak to the board. And first of all, I'd like to say Kyle, his mother, and his sister are here. They're listening. They wanted to hear the comments today. They will work with DNR along with their representative who prepared the manure management plan. If there are any issues with the manure management plan, and we've heard the comments, those will be addressed with DNR. And that's the purpose of the hearing today, is the manure management plan, of course. So that's what we're here for, what we came to listen for. Just a few other comments. I will state, and I've been through a number of these on behalf of various clients, those who have concerns with the operation beyond the manure management plan, which is not really why we're here today to address those other concerns, but I'm glad to mention them. Kyle and his family obviously disagree with those comments, but we respect the people's right to make those comments, and I can assure you that Kyle and his family have no intention of causing problems for anyone. Kyle will be living right next to the building. And again, we understand people don't agree with what I just said. We've heard all those comments. But Kyle is here to listen. He's here to do the best he can to run a good operation. And again, I know people will disagree with me, but that's part of the process. And that's the reason he's here. It is a family farming operation. And I know people disagree with me about that definition, and I'm sorry. I have a different... It is a family operation. Kyle farms with his mother and father, and he'll continue to do that. If you have any questions for me, I'll be glad to try and answer them.
Yeah, my biggest question for you and this whole thing is, it seems to me that that we've got to make sure that the paperwork is correct. Our role in this is clearly to take the paperwork, take all comments, pro and con, and get those passed on to DNR. It concerns me when there are clearly some mistakes in the paper, or at least some perceived mistakes within the paperwork, and so I would really like us to get those straightened out right up front.
I assure you that Kyle, the preparers of the MMP Pinnacle, and myself, if need be, will address any issues. I'm not saying those are issues, but if those will be comments made to DNR, and we will work with DNR to address those.
My question, more or less, is back to Margaret in terms of the manure management plan and some of the suggestions or questions, and yourself. When we talk about whether there is either incomplete information or incorrect information or whatever, what is the timetable that the DNR requires from the time that we receive the manure management plan, have the public hearing like we're having today, which we weren't required to have?
That's correct.
But then send any concerns that we might have. And, Margaret, I don't know if you have any acknowledgement of what type of time table there is. The problem that I'm having with this, basically, is that, and I'm no expert, but based on just some of the comments that have been raised regarding the application itself, if there are questionable omissions or questionable facts that is not correct as people are interpreting, is do we have a responsibility to make sure that that information is presented so that we have all of our questions answered regarding the application itself? And so that's one of the questions that I have. The other one basically is that as of a few years ago throughout the state of Iowa, there has been more and more public response to the corporate forms, as you are alluding to, or some are alluding to here today. Again, talking about the difference between what's a corporate farm and what's a family farm. And in some of these examples, it has been because of the community response, some changes have happened. But to my knowledge, there's only been very few where the DNR has actually denied the process. In some cases, and I believe a year ago or so, Story County took a strong position in terms of acknowledging our concern about the waterway, the closeness to Hickory Grove in the perceived area. So my question to the supervisors would be for us to at least consider what we presented and what statements we made in sending that information at this point in time, even though I don't think it is exactly the same measure. But there are some questions about the runoff and the water source nearby, which I'm not aware of, but I'm going to just take people's word for what, you know, they've said. So my question would be, is would it be in our best interest to take a look at what we did a year or so ago when we were referring this to Hickory Park in terms of the type of statement that we would use in to follow our communication to the DNR. I still think at that time we acknowledged receipt of it, but I think we did have a statement from the Board of Supervisors and the Conservation Board because they also took action in this case. So if you could just maybe answer that, I would help. I would appreciate it.
I had to refer to Chapter 65 under Manure Management Plan requirements, and they have to submit the manure management plan 30 days before construction starts. So whether or not the clock restarts if they submit new information would be the key here. What is? Well, when I talked to DNR to see if this information was acceptable the way it was, and we brought to their attention that we didn't know for sure that he was a renter, they said that that this was acceptable information, that they don't really follow up on seen written agreements. But maybe in this case, they will.
Wait a minute, please. Let's.
You know, I'm just
we don't
saying
want
what
a back
I said.
And forth between.
We did contact them and talk to them about, you know, whether or not you have to be owner or a specific agreement, and they said generally they do not follow up on those. That's what they told me over the phone. I'm sorry. Jeff Theobald. So, you know, if they resubmit, it would be at least another 30 days. What is the day on that?
July 15th.
Thank you. That's all I have.
Okay. Thanks, Margaret. I am really concerned about the representations that were made to us that apparently came from Jeff Theobald and Bill Gibbons of the DNR. And I really think, and Jessica, I need some advice from you on this, that we need to get to the bottom of this simply because so we've got the responsibility to take the comments. We have expanded that responsibility to include notifying surrounding property owners within Story County. We've expanded it by making sure that we take those comments in a public meeting. But we have, that I can see anyway, no real authority here. We can make some symbolic gestures. We can make statements. But then to have, apparently, Jeff Theobald and Bill Gibbons representing that the county has control of this, I really feel like we need to get to the bottom of that. Because if we have the authority to do something, that's great. Let's take that authority. If we don't, then I don't feel like we need DNR making representations that we have authority.
Well, I mean, state code is very specific, and Iowa Code Section 459 deals specifically with the authority that's vested in the Iowa DNR to approve these facilities. And Iowa Administrative Code Chapter 65 is the actual DNR regulations that DNR has to abide by when they're approving these facilities. So our role is statutory and is limited by our state code. I have not, I can't explain why someone from the DNR would say otherwise. Your role is really to receive the manure management plan, to receive comments, and you can make non-binding public recommendations that go to the DNR. But again, those are non-binding, so the DNR doesn't have to follow those. But the code is clear, so I don't have an explanation for what Mr. Theobald or Givens has said. I'd be happy to talk with them at any time. This isn't an unclear area of the code, so I'm not sure why that information would have been given to any of these residents. It's a shame. It's well, not. It's contrary to the law.
Jessica, if it's okay with the other two members of the board, maybe you and I can go visit with Mr. Theobald and Mr. Givens. And
that'd be my pleasure.
Is that all right with you guys? If okay. Let's see, the next item that I have is, and I heard it a couple times, this idea of an evening meeting. Now, I got to tell you, I feel like, you know what, we need to stop right there. Paul, you were our collator of comments that we received via other means, right, other than people coming here, and we wanted to make sure those get into the record.
Right.
So,
right. The three of us, I believe, received two separate emails from two individuals, and then we had one walk in. Mr. Shipton came in one day last week and visited with Mr. Sanders and myself about this. So I have two emails. I can read them into the record if you want, or I can simply give the individual's name and the city that they reside in and just state that they're both opposed to The first one I received was from an Angie Carter who lives in Ames, and she's a graduate student at Iowa State, and she was very eloquent in her opposition to this. I received a very simple note yesterday, I think the three of us did, from a Jenny Wilson, and I have no address for Miss Wilson. She is simply opposed to the men's factory farm in Story County. And those are the only written comments that I received.
Okay. So now we have those in the record, and if Shelley would make sure that those are part of our packet.
Mr. Chair, I want to ask you a question, and Mike Cox, I believe, is still here from Conservation and so forth. When the first proposal was brought to us a little over a year ago, if my recollection is correct, we didn't immediately take action to acknowledge that at that particular meeting because we wanted to get some additional information. What I'm trying to determine is I see a similar process here only because of some of the questionable, you know, areas that we want to get more information about concerning the DNR's comments about what we can and cannot do. I want some clarification about if we didn't take action today to acknowledge receipt of it, but set a further date to do so. And then I guess the other question would be, is it something that we would want to do to reach out to Collins community to allow input for an evening meeting? And then how that all works in the whole timetable of all this. I would have no problem with going to Collins and doing that in an evening session if that satisfies giving more people an opportunity to respond. So the first part of the question is what happens if we defer any action today on acknowledging receipt of it to allow for further information and possibly considering whether to hold another public hearing in the Collins area.
Yeah, and that was the next thing on my list was to discuss the evening meeting. Jessica, I'd ask you to come up again. Tell me about this whole acknowledge. I mean, clearly we've received the manure management plan. There's no way to say anything but we've received it. I think clearly there's some questions about making sure that some of the assertions of does he own or rent, some of the differing names. I mean, I think those are legitimate questions that we need to get to the bottom of, but I'm not sure how all of this impacts that 30-day window. As I understand it, the 30-day window started on July 15th, and it runs regardless of what action we take. If the three of us were to decide that, you know, we'd like to go down to Collins, and I can only imagine that it would be, you know, exactly what we had today, plus more that we would see, then how does that impact everything? And so what can you tell us?
Our 30-day window does run from July 15th, and so we want to make sure that we get our comments to the DNR within that 30 days for consideration.
Okay.
So if you want more public comment, you're going to need to do that quickly to incorporate that in the recommendations and in the comments that you send to the Department of Natural Resources. And I would really caution you to watch that 30 days, because after that, then they don't have to consider anything. So I think that this would need to be done sooner than later. That's my advice.
Well, I've got some concerns. This is, Rick, you and I have been on the board the same amount of time, and we've looked at a lot of these. And this is the first one that I can remember that I've actually had somebody question
some
of the information. And
exactly.
At this point, I don't have any way to determine whether or not this information on here is accurate. I don't have any reason to doubt that it is, but the question's been raised. And I think it would be in this board's best interest to make sure that we have the correct information on any document that we're asked to acknowledge, whether we have any authority to approve any of it or not. We're asked to acknowledge it, and I would be more comfortable knowing that the information on here is in fact correct.
Just remember your 30 days is
right.
Taking, yeah.
And
so,
with
yeah.
that, I think.
So I don't know can we ask that of the attorney that's here today? I mean, is he prepared to address the concerns with the manure management application? I don't know.
Yeah, if you have any, like I said, I don't have any reason to doubt that the information is not accurate.
Yeah,
yes.
Elton, you.
In talking with Kyle, we believe the information is accurate.
Yep.
So we'll work, but we will. With the comments have been made, and we'll talk with DNR, and we'll. Our understanding is that it is approvable as is. Okay. But again, we will work with those involved to make sure it is correct. And believe me, DNR will do that.
Well, one of the guiding principles that I've always used is that every party has the right to due process. I believe the citizens that have come to us and have raised concerns have every right to raise the concerns, raise the questions that they raised. I also believe that Mr. Menz has and his family have certain rights lifestyle or, you know, operations, etc., as long as everything is done within the limits of the law that is currently there. And so the problem, it's not a problem, but it's making sure, from my standpoint, that both those factors are considered. That if the operation is legal within the confines of the law, and then I want to be able to know that we have at least done everything that we could to present to the DNR all the background factors that have been presented to us in a public meeting, because ultimately that way they make the final decisions unless they are willing to waive that and give that authority to us, which I doubt is going to happen in this short period of time. So that's really my ultimate concern, is that I do believe and I recognize that there is two competing groups here that has a vested interest in what they believe is the right course of action. And it's important that we allow the process to fully unfold so that we get that information out there. And even though we have a time constraint, I believe we can work within that time constraint. And, Mr. Chair, I would be comfortable in asking us to not take any formal action today, but to take a quick look at our calendar and see when we could schedule an evening meeting and to do a follow-up, and also be able to allow Mr. Menz, if he or and his family so desire, working through their attorney, if they say that all the information is correct, that's their position, fine. But we can at least raise those issues, and I would suggest that we try to convene another meeting as quickly as possible make our decision at a later date.
Is that a motion?
That is a motion.
I'll second that.
I don't have the exact date today,
right,
but
so
I'll look at the calendar.
Let's make sure that I understand the motion that was just made and seconded so that we're all talking about the same thing. I'm hearing you suggest no action on the manure management plan as it's in front of us, acknowledgement that this is an issue that is worthy of further public comment, and we as the Board of Supervisors will find a time in the appropriate time frame to get down to Collins. We'll have to work with Collins to find a location that would be suitable and get down and hear more public comment for ultimate action by the Board of Supervisors. Is that anywhere close to what you were talking about?
That is close to what I'm concerned with. And as I say, I don't see, even at the end of the day, unless something is different from the DNR that I'm not aware of, that at the end of the day, we either are going to acknowledge or not acknowledge the receipt of the manure management plan. So, but I do think that we, yes.
You think it warrants further? Okay. And, Paul, you seconded that. Jessica, I'd like to, if at all possible, make sure that you and I get over to see Mr. Theobald and Mr. Gibbons prior to that and maybe even invite them to anything if in fact, this were to pass. Further conversation, Paul, anything to add?
We need to try to set, I mean, I would think ideally we would want to set our public hearing in Collins in the next, I would think maybe next Monday evening. That way anything.
We just got a publication notification that we have to.
Drainage District Tuesday night.
Tuesday night. But if we do it Monday evening, we can take any of those comments, and if this can be back on our agenda for a week from today for acknowledgement.
Is it 7 or 14 days? What's the publication date that we would have to have for the public hearing? 4 to 20. Okay.
Well, the problem is now we probably can't get it in the paper. I don't know what the cutoff date is for the
Thursday.
But we could.
2 weeks from Thursday would be the soonest we could do it?
Thursday would be the cutoff date for the following
Thursday in the paper. What notification requirements?
So the board can, with 24 hours notice, have a public meeting like this. And
right.
So there's not a requirement that it be an actual public hearing that's publicized like we have to do when we're bonding or that kind of thing.
Sure.
So we can get this done with 24 hours notice. We need to make sure that it's distributed to the people in this room.
I have a feeling that would be taken care of.
And
pretty,
and that we get the word out community-wise so that anyone who wants to be there can be there. But
yeah, this doesn't require a public hearing.
Correct. You don't. You didn't even.
Going down. Right. If we were to go down to Collins, we'd be
just
going
for a
down
public
to
meeting.
Receive comments.
Public information
right.
meeting.
Public information meeting. Okay. And that's the clarification that I needed, because I wanted to make sure that no one came back and said, well, you didn't follow the procedure and notification of public meeting, et cetera.
No, because yeah. There's no requirement that
Wayne,
a public meeting occurs.
Wayne, how is your calendar on Monday the 5th? That's the
fine.
5th, isn't it?
I will change whatever I've got. If
I don't think
got
I have
it.
Anything on
yeah.
it. So
this
well,
is
I think it's perfectly reasonable if we were to pass a motion like this for us to go ahead and set – now, what we can't do is we can't set a location simply because we don't know what that would be yet. But we could set a date and then get on the phone with the mayor.
Mr. Shipton, where would be a good place in Collins to have this meeting?
Collins, and I'll take care of getting it rented for you.
Yep. Done. But what?
Next Monday night, just tell me what time.
I would also suggest, and I, if you want me or if you, Mr. Sanders, either one, I would reach
oh,
out
no, I,
to Jasper.
Steve, I was talking to the gentleman behind you. He was raising your hand. Please come up so we get you on the microphone, sir.
Out to Jasper County that. Supervisor to notify them of, you know, that we plan to hold another public open meeting and so forth.
Yes, please introduce yourself.
My name is Lloyd Rasmussen. I live up at Colo. I just want to make sure if you're going to have this meeting that you make sure the people in the other counties are notified also.
Right, and that's hard for us.
That's hard for us to do. As I'm just said, I'm suggesting we contact the Jasper County Supervisors and tell them of what our concern is, and we plan to hold another meeting, and any publication and notification there has to be borne by Jasper County.
Nothing's worse than not feeling like you're included in the community.
Right,
you know?
Right. I know.
I would suggest 6:30. I mean, that would give people time to get home from work, and so.
Okay, so Wayne, we got a motion from you, Wayne. Paul's making suggested amendments.
So 6:30. We set a time. Yeah,
time and date.
Date.
All right.
I'm
took that. You obviously. So we're suggesting deferring action, holding another public meeting to receive comments on Monday, August 5th at 6:30 p.m. at the Collins Community Center, which...
Call them today. If there is a problem, I'll call back and let...
So tentatively set for the Collins Community Center. We're going to count on everybody in this room to get the word out. We'll publicize it on the on our website. Margaret, I don't believe there's time for you to put together a letter and get it out to those Story County property owners, is there? Okay. Well, we'll try to do that on the Story County side. Wayne would contact the Jasper County supervisors and ask that they notify anybody and everybody that they can. But really, I mean, this is a good demonstration of grassroots activism right here, and that's what it's going to take if you guys want to get your neighbors out to receive comments. The only thing that I would ask, the only frustrating part for me in any of this is when I am asked to overstep what I think my bounds by law are, and in some cases be made to feel like I'm a bad guy if I'm not willing to overstep what the law tells me I can do. So I'd like us to stay away from that. So motion, second, further discussion.
I would just like to add, ask as the chair that you extend a personal invitation to Mr. Theobald and Mr. Gibbons.
Jessica and I are going to try to get in and meet with them, and I will invite them. Anything else? Wayne, anything else? Okay. Hearing nothing. Clinton?
Aye.
Toot?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Deferred action, second public meeting set for the 5th in Collins. Let's take a 5-minute recess, and then we'll move on with the agenda.
So we're ready? All right, I'll call us back to order. Next item on our agenda, and hopefully a shorter item, Darren.
I'll try.
Discussion and consideration of voter grader quotations.
Yes.
Darren, you took the room.
I was hoping they weren't here for me, so.
Do you still have our tablet?
No, Margaret's got
it. She took it to make copies. She can bring it right to you in the hallway. Thank you. Yes, sir.
Sorry.
All right, we're on motor grader quotations.
Okay, we have two quotes for motor graders, and the good news is it's really little unchanged from last year at this time. The prices are about exactly the same. The first column here is Murphy John Deere. They went up about $1,500 from last year, and Ziegler Cat pretty much stayed the same within $100. So same recommendation as last year. Two major things to consider with the CAT is, one, the resale value. My numbers show $30,000 to $40,000 greater for a CAT trade-in than a John Deere. CAT shows those even higher, so I'd say $30,000 to $40,000 is pretty conservative. The other thing is the controls on the CAT are, my opinion and our operator's opinion, is far superior. We got the two joystick system. John Deere's tried. They've got four joysticks on each side, and we had them come up and demo it again, and it is just difficult to drive. And when you're out there, you know, 10 hours a day driving motor grader, that's very important. So with that, I did throw on, John Deere did want us to throw in this model. It did not meet our specs, mainly due to lower horsepower, but I did throw it in, and they came in at the total cost would be $239. $17,000 less than CAT. You just can't get an apples-to-apples comparison with these. And the best we try is right here. Even at the $17,000 less.
But it didn't meet our specs.
No, it didn't meet the specs.
Darren, my big question in this is, I know that you and your staff have worked hard on putting together a possible 5-year lease plan that I believe now rests with our capital improvement plan committee that's meeting, talking about the new budget year. It seems to me that one of the proposals that you brought forward, understanding that we were talking about starting in 2015, one of the proposals that you brought forward would have a lease payment that first year that would be comparable to this. Now, this is
definitely
money that's already budgeted.
Mm-hmm.
So my question to you is, does it make any sense at all to hold off on buying, not saying we're not going to buy anything, but hold off on buying it until that group finishes its work and is ready for a recommendation to the board, and then maybe we go ahead, if the recommendation is we go ahead and do it, we get started a year earlier, which, as I understand it, I think I've been hearing things that there might be a change in
yes.
specifications or a change in requirements that these things have, and so it may be to an advantage to get started earlier. Right. And so I didn't know if you wanted to address any of that.
I would like to, and I was going to talk about it tomorrow, too, at our capital improvements meeting. But what's happening, we weren't sure if it was going to take effect this year or not, and it didn't. It's July 1st, 2014, they have to meet EPA Tier 4 requirements, and that's kind of a big change. Cat and deer are both estimating a 6 to 8% increase to do that. And so we're talking additional $20,000 at least for that machine, just for the cost. What that does is there's a separate fuel tank, DEF fuel we have to put in that tank, so that's an additional cost to us. Also, we estimate that to be about $6,000 a year per machine, just for the fuel. And then we also have the hassle of getting that fuel distributed throughout the county, because we have motor graders spread out throughout the county, so that's eventually it's going to come, but this would allow us to delay it at least another 5 years. We're talking probably at least a savings of $300,000 over that five-year period for the first five-year lease period if we did that.
So I would suggest that that's information that capital improvement committee needs to take into consideration as they think about what kind of recommendation they're going to bring back to the board. But then my question for you becomes, give me the timing. Okay, we know this money's budgeted. Give me the timing that if for some reason that was not the recommendation, or this board did not agree with the recommendation of that capital improvement committee and we didn't move to that five-year lease program, how late would be too late to go ahead and purchase this motor grader for this year that's budgeted for this year?
The issue is they have to get it ordered in the assembly. They have to get it fabricated by that July 1st date of next year.
But
I don't know the cutoff. Would you happen to have a general?
You want to come up, please?
Sure. State your name.
Travis McDowell with Ziegler Caterpillar. The Tier 4 transition that's going to happen is happening a little bit different for each dealer. And there's some I shouldn't say dealer, each manufacturer. There's some flexibility they have if they're willing to do certain things. Now, I guess I can speak for what Caterpillar is going to do. They will be building some Tier 4 interim machines after the first of the year. Now, the July 1st date is a pretty good timeline. That being said, with the number of machines that you're considering, that kind of compounds that time frame as far as, okay, the availability of building one versus building 10 from a factory standpoint. The other thing, there's no real issue with when you do it as far as, I mean, I guess the sooner the better.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing that's going to happen when this transitions from Tier 4 interim, which is what we're in now, to Tier 4 final to include the diesel exhaust fluid, a lot of dealers are going to be trying to get their orders in as well. So that's going to jam up that of availability. There's no way to forecast that. It's just, I'm pretty sure that's probably what's going to happen. Because the longer the Tier 4 final is not a bad system. It's not going to create any complications as far as how the equipment operates. It's more of a just like he's talking, the handling of the actual fluid and just being able to avoid that cost if you can. It's inevitable, but if you can.
But if we could push it off 5 years,
absolutely.
I mean, especially at you said 6,000 per machine would be your estimate.
Just for the fuel cost.
Just for the fuel cost, not including the cost of the machine. So my question in general terms would be, if Story County were to make some kind of decision later this fall, call it October, November, do you feel like that's still soon enough that there would be availability for those interim machines to still be being made?
Yes, I think you'd be okay if you kept it to a fall timeline. You know,
even going to 10. I mean, clearly one would be easier than 10.
And I've checked into some of this just because it felt like maybe we'd end up going down this road as far as those questions. But, yeah, if we get after the first of the year, it's going to be a little tricky. But if we can keep it this fall and keep it relatively close. You know, obviously the sooner the better that we have that availability, but. Yeah, I feel confident saying that. Okay.
So then my suggestion to the two of you for you is that we ask that capital improvement committee to put this item on the top of their agenda and come back with a recommendation to us as soon as possible so that we can act on it, so that Darren knows whether he's buying one motor grader or we're leasing 10 motor graders and really changing out our fleet. Darren, does that sound about right to you? Or
yeah, that sounds good. And what we're really getting, we've got from Ziegler, they've given us their sample lease purchase agreement. So I can get that to the county attorney to start the review right on that. The terms we haven't really ironed out yet. There'd be a couple of additional terms, hours we're going to put on it, max hours.
Right, but you gave us kind of a sample of that as you talked through the possibility of this program several weeks ago, right?
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, I would encourage you guys to get to the hard and fat. I would say know that this is something that Story County is truly considering. I mean, we've got it in a committee to make a recommendation to the board, but we need all the specific details as soon as possible to get that done. Starts with Jessica Reynolds making sure she's okay with any of the agreements, but then really running through that committee to make sure that the dollars and cents all add up like I would think we would need them to add up. And I would assume you would help us get all that.
Absolutely. And quite honestly, with the numbers that were presented a while back, the only variable there is just trying to determine how many hours per year that
and Darren, you should be able to plug that in.
We've got a good history on that. Yeah.
All right. So that's my suggestion.
Sure. I mean, we have to remember that we're just kicking this can down the road 5 years. But if we can do that, that'll give you more time to get your system in place, like you said, how you're going to distribute this fuel around the county and how that's going to work. But
and by that time, they might have it at gas stations because everybody's going to have to start going to this.
Right.
So right now we have 2.5-gallon jugs we got to carry everywhere, and it's a 20-gallon tank. So
well, it starts with you going to that CIP committee and let's making sure that stays on the top of their agenda.
Do that.
All right. So then no action required here today. Okay.
Nope.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you.
Both.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Here, just a quick minute.
Absolutely.
Ron, if you'd like, I can come over to meet you at the lunch. If you don't want to stay at all, then I'll come over to meet you afterwards.
Okay. There's another item.
He's got one more item that he's on.
I didn't want you to have to sit here all morning.
Okay. Next item is discussion and consideration of Resolution 1407 terminating the 2080 agreement with the City of McCallsburg for jurisdiction and control of farm-to-market extensions.
Okay, I think the board is pretty familiar with this already. I just wanted to point out a couple of items. One, the City of McCallsburg took action on this. It was back in April, actually, to turn this back over to the county. We weren't aware of that till recently, but essentially, it's where the black lines end. That was City of McCallsburg. Now, the other thing I wanted to point out, just recently, the Farm to Market Review Board requested an Attorney General's opinion on a lot of the counties did this, turned roads back. By code, they are county roads under 500 population, and a lot of cities wanted the control and the road use tax dollars to continue to come to them, so the agreements were made. Counties were in the assumption that transferred jurisdiction back. The opinion now is it did not do that. It was just essentially a maintenance agreement. So I am very comfortable taking this road back over because I'm a little uncomfortable with how it was being, if it was being maintained properly. We don't know. And if we have some responsibility there, I'd just soon do it ourselves. So I wanted to point those couple things out. And also, when the mayor stated this in the council meeting before they took action, he noted we would leave that stop sign in place, and he also commented the speed limit would have to go back up to 35. We never really said that's where it would be. We said it would probably be higher than 25, which it is now. So we'll have to pass resolution on the speed limit. And I am looking at it. I'm probably okay with 35 coming through here. There's a stop sign here anyway, so the cars are stopping. If the stop condition wasn't there, it could probably be pushed up to 45. And like I say, it's difficult to do a speed study because it's already posted at 25. So you really can't do a speed study.
That's still going through the heart of the community, right?
Yeah.
In that section, yeah.
And this stretch here is 25, and I'd almost be comfortable leaving that 25 because all those driveways come off and the houses are really close to the road. So the feeling when you're driving through there is 25 would probably be acceptable. But so that's kind of where I'm leaning, 35 here and 25 through town here.
And maintaining the stop sign.
My conversation with them was their biggest concern was the stop sign.
Okay.
The street where the stop sign is directly north of the school, and there's a lot of kids that live in that area. And
correct.
So
it's actually this one here.
Encouraged to use that street to get down to the school, and they've got a stop sign there.
Right.
So with that, they took action, but it needs our 2080 agreement said it needed to be in writing, so I gave them a copy of our resolution, and they're going to pass it also. So at this point, I would recommend the board pass the resolution to turn the road back over to the county.
I would so move.
Okay. We have a motion and a second to adopt Resolution 1407. Further discussion? Clinton?
Aye.
Aye. Sanders? Aye. Resolution 1407 passes. Thanks, Darren. Oh, next one for Darren. Discussion and consideration of plan to revert the pavement of on Old S-27, 650th Avenue, back to gravel, located in Section 15, Indian Creek Township.
That's that little spur there we're talking about.
Yep, that is the spur. We've talked about this a few times, and the reason we're back again is there's no requirement the board takes any type of official action to turn the road back over to gravel, but there's a couple landowners out here in particular that would like to see the board take some sort of official action on this. We did one. The last one we did was County Home Road north of Nevada here. We turned that back to gravel 6-8 years ago, and I don't think there was ever any formal action taken on that, but it's happened before in the past. But don't believe anybody's here. I sent notices out.
There's one I brought back here.
Oh, sorry.
Go ahead.
Apologize. So I would be interested in any comments they would have up front here. Maybe
something you can address for me right up front, Darren. It looks to me like. Okay, so you've got the two residences up top.
Right, correct.
And then you've got a couple farmers that need to access the farm ground down on the bottom, which I would assume is the primary use of that southern portion. My question is, would we consider, and why wouldn't we consider, abandoning the northern section of Old S-27 to those two residents, and turning the southern portion into a level B road, which would continue to allow access for the farmers? It would save us minimal times of having to turn around a road grader. I know that's one of your big concerns. And so as I look at this, this looks to me to potentially be a natural to take the southern portion of that, kind of where all the farmland is, back to a level B road and keep it good for the farmers during farming season, but not mess with it at all in the winter, abandon that northern portion to those two property owners, and it become their responsibility.
Because they still have the outlet into the northern area there. It's in close proximity of the homes, right?
Yeah, well, that would become their private drive, as I see it.
Let me run through this real quick, then. I'll show you one little concern I have with that. It's not a major one. Current condition of the road, it's pretty poor, getting concerned. The pictures don't do justice to how rough this road really is. And we're
down there this morning, and I can attest to that.
Okay, thank you. You can see my paint mark there is where we're going to seal coat up to, and that has been done now. Here's the seal coat on it up to those points.
Okay.
And you can see where we stopped because the road essentially disappeared there, and we can't seal coat over dirt. It just doesn't work. So we took it as far as we could. So the plan now was we're going to try to rip this up the best we could. It's just a thin seal coat, so I think we can tear it up gradually with our skid loader or something and haul that top stuff away. The one issue with, the two things, if we vacated this stretch, and that would turn it back over to the property owners. One, I want to make sure I hear from this person that is okay. This one we've heard from saying they would like that to happen. I'd want to hear the same from this person because they'd have to plow themselves out to get up to S-27. And two, this property stops right here. So technically they wouldn't have legal access to cross this little stretch. This property owner owns all this too. So they'd have to cross that property owner to get out. So they have to form some type of easement or something to get out. And unfortunately, there's a little sliver. I don't know why that's there that this property owner owns. They'd have to get across that, too. So there'd be some legal issues on easements trying to get them out.
Is another possibility that if the eastern landowner, could they have access straight to new S-27, or is there not a way across right there if we needed a drive?
I think that's possible. I'd have to look at it again, but it'd be some expense to the landowner to build a new driveway over there. I think it's a little bit deeper ditch, so the driveway could be a little bit costly.
Okay, so other concerns other than we haven't heard from that eastern side landowner about this idea?
No, if that idea is agreeable to landowners, like I say, we'd have to keep this here because there's number of accesses here, so if it was level B, they'd still have access to it, and we wouldn't have to plow it in the winter, so that would work for us.
Okay.
That's certainly something we ought to consider. I think it's an option that we hadn't thought about, but in the long run, this is a perfect example of, since we're talking about turning back to gravel, to do it in that manner, which would...
But what I'm specifically asking for today is an answer on if I can start tearing some of this, the pavement out and turning it back to gravel.
Right.
As I talk with this property owner, this stretch is, for some reason, is a lot better shape. And we shouldn't have to do that for a number of years down there. So I'm just asking if we can just start the process of tearing some of the stuff up, because there's farmers down here that are complaining that they're tearing their equipment up trying to get over that.
And how would that change if ultimately we decided to take that to a level B? How would that change how you would tear this up? Would it all be the same process anyway?
Be the same, correct? Yeah.
No matter what we do with it, we need to at least get the old pavement or the blacktop or seal coat off of it.
Correct.
If it goes back to a level B, you can you know, we'll still have that stripped off of there, and then you know we can decide you know what we're going to do. It may be easier just to take it to a level B and have us. I mean, we would still be responsible to plow out the north end of it, but that's, I mean, there's some concerns about it getting a motor grader down there and
stopping at the end of the
seal coat and getting turned around, but.
Yeah, in the winter that'd be difficult.
Okay. All right. Sir, I would ask if you have any comments. Come on up here so we'll get you recorded for all posterity. Start by introducing yourself, please.
Mike Peavy.
And Mike, where do you live?
On the corner there of 305th and 650th.
It's
done. Right there. No, that east-west road, that's not too bad of a shape. I thought I'd like to keep that if we could.
Would you speak more into the mic? We're recording this, please. Thank you.
Yeah, I'd like to keep that east-west part there because it's not too bad of a shape. And then my property ends there about where the Y is on the south side. And that would, reason why we lived on the pavement is to stay away from the dust and the gravel roads and stuff. And
sure.
There's a lot of traffic that goes east and west, not so much on that north-south road.
And so the board's aware we just seal coated about up to the
there.
Property line here.
Yep. And you say that's in relatively good shape right now.
Even the part that didn't get seal coated is in pretty good shape. The old,
yeah.
The old pavement's in pretty good shape.
Yep. That's what I'd like to see stay. I can understand the other part. I'd like to have it all paved, but it's probably not going to happen.
Yeah. The way since you live right there, the way old S-27 is used kind of on that southern two-thirds, it primarily would it be the farmers accessing their fields up there? Is that your experience?
Yeah, the farmers come by my place. The driveway is on just right across from my place to that. But then they go around and go north to get into the field on the west. There's a couple of driveways there.
But any auto traffic that's going north right there is going to go all past your place. Coming from the west, we go past your place and up on New 27.
Yeah, or south.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, there's a lot of traffic there. And at one time I heard them talking about maybe paving that all the way to S-14. I don't know if that was any truth to that or not. That's years ago, so I've heard something about it, but nothing have ever come of it.
Darren, is that on our five-year plan?
Unfortunately, it may have been at one time, but as most are new paving projects, the funding is just kind of
dissipated. No, that doesn't bother me any because that keeps the traffic down going by my place anyway.
Thank you for being here
today.
Thank
you. Exactly. Okay.
And I have one other written comment I received. I'd like to read that in. And this is from Mr. Bianfang, and he's located right here. He's the one that proposed this issue of closing the north stretch and level being the south. One concern he had, well, first he asked for his petition to the Story County Engineers, Story County Board of Supervisors not to improve this stretch of road. He'd like to see it remain as is, which I explained to him isn't an option for liability-wise for the county. His first reason for that is safety. They're concerned that if you improve that, unnecessarily significantly increase traffic in front of their home and their neighbors across the street, their children traverse to either home daily, and don't want a distracted young child or driver to cause one of their children to get hurt or killed. Additionally, they have pets that follow the children across the road, and they don't want them to be injured or killed. Currently, people like to speed on this road as quickly as possible, and the only thing to slow them down is the condition of the road south of the property, and they don't want to see more traffic when they can use S-27. If improvements must be made, how will safety be addressed? Example, speed bumps, and who will be held accountable? His second point was tax dollar expenditures, and this is where he gets into, we'd like to make the north end private access, and that would require us to vacate the road for the Martins and them, and eliminate the need for county maintenance. They look forward to our response and seeing written requirements for removing the pavement on S-27.
Does removing the pavement improve? I mean, clearly it takes the potholes and things out, but right. Would you call that substantially improving the road, or is it just removing the pavement and then we've got to figure out whether we're going to put gravel down or we're going to let it go level?
No, that's an important distinction. He considers that as an improvement, taking out the pavement. I don't consider that as an improvement, but that's his definition. He'd like to see it with the potholes left in it to slow traffic down, and I, like I said, explain that just as a liability problem for the county.
We see it as it will improve the condition of the road, but it's not going to be paved and it's going to be gravel, you know, to the best of my knowledge. So, yeah.
And I would expect if it gets turned back to gravel, the car traffic will not take that route anymore.
Right.
It's only 25 vehicles a day now, and I expect that to go down.
Mm-hmm.
No reason. Really, there's no reason for anybody to take it. I mean, it doesn't. There's just the two houses on the north end.
Yep. So the board could give me direction if we can start turning that back to gravel and talk to this property owner on their feelings about, you know, vacating the north stretch and turning it to private maintenance.
So is it your recommendation that the board we do this?
Correct. Okay. Right now, I'd like guidance that we can start turn it back to gravel. The other part needs some more public input before we can proceed with that.
Okay, but help me with this, Darren. Pulling the old seal coat up does not just automatically turn it back to gravel. What happens when you pull the seal coat up? What is it?
We just dug down. It's just fine. A lot of asphalt left in it, but it's still, there's no substance. It's soft, so you can just keep digging. So it's essentially dirt. So we'd have to bring some rock in, which would be fine. We need to do that.
If it's going to be gravel, but not if it's going to be level B.
Or maybe even if it's level B, we probably should bring a little bit of rock in once.
Yeah.
My concern is if ultimately we're going to go to level B, I don't want to spend any more than absolutely necessary for it to be if we took it to level B. Now, clearly, as you've suggested, if we were going to take it to level B, at a minimum, we need to talk to that eastern property owner right there and make sure that they are, in fact, going to have access to new 27 and things like that.
Correct.
Motion?
Yeah.
Make a motion that we direct the engineer to begin the process of returning the north-south part of 650th back to gravel.
Second.
All right. And I assume that that north-south part stops where he seal-coated from the south right there from New 27, just for clarification. And then I would like that to also include a request that Darren go visit with both those northern property owners and see if there's any appetite at all for us to vacate that road and possibly go to level B further south.
I'll make that amendment.
I will second it.
All right, further discussion. Toot.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Darren, does that give you enough?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, bud.
All right.
All right. Next item on our agenda is consideration of Resolution 1405, Assignment of Fund Balances, the one and only Lisa Martin.
Kind of way I explained, mentioned her yesterday that she was the one and only.
She is the one and only.
Only because he wanted something.
Some days I'm thankful of that.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so in the fiscal year always means we have to assign some fund balances. You passed a policy, or you passed a resolution way back in a long time ago, 2011, saying that you will every year assign and or commit and or restrict or whatever fund balances. What I have in front of you is a couple of departments have requested some assignments of fund balances. You are the entity that can do that. You can assign and commit them, but assigning is a lot easier, so that's what we opt for. Asset. Deb Shildroth had asked if we would assign $9,061 of funds that were not utilized from 13 into 14. So I'm requesting that we do that of those funds. The IT director requested that we assign $60,000 for content management project that is slower than anticipated.
Like molasses.
Like molasses, yes. And so I'm including that in the general fund balance. Supplemental, you budgeted and approved $100,000 to be assigned for the purchase of future election equipment. Rural fund, that's $42,321 is the amount of uncommitted local option sales tax dollars. And then inmate commissary and county attorney fine collection per the state auditors, those also need to be assigned for these purposes. And then restricted capital conservation acquisition and capital projects fund and the capital project TIF fund are the two balances. These are the cash balances at the end of FY13 for these funds.
Questions for Lisa? If not, a motion.
I will move approval of Resolution 1405.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Further discussion? Toot.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Resolution 1405 is passed. Thank you, Mrs. Markley. Consideration of workplace harassment policy, Alyssa Wignall.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Wow.
It is afternoon.
Order me a pizza from Molly's.
The original draft went through a few weeks ago, and I did receive just a couple comments. The only changes they wanted clarification if for some reason the person that is, it says you need to go to your supervisor when you have a complaint. They asked, well, what if the supervisor was the one that was committing the harassment? So we just cleared that up a little bit in the policy. And then they also wanted to make sure that we included that employees or individuals reporting violations would be protected from repercussions in accordance with the whistleblower protection laws, which are laws which we abide with. So those are the only two changes. Other than that, I didn't receive any comments.
Okay. Questions for Alyssa?
Nope.
Do we have a motion?
I would move consideration or move approval of the workplace harassment policy as submitted, as amended.
Second. We have a motion and a second. Further discussion? Clinton.
Aye.
Toot.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Workplace harassment policy is adopted. Next item is consideration of amended conservation easement with Stephen M. Stoll and Linda M. Stoll. Mike Cox. Hi, Mike.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. Long morning.
How was your vacation?
Wonderful.
Remind me where you went?
South Dakota and Wyoming.
Oh, that's outstanding. You just able to get away from it all?
Yes.
Go sans technology for a while?
Have cell reception.
All right.
So,
I assume that you are Mr. Stoll. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, sir.
Glad to have you.
Well, I want to thank Mr. Stoll for hanging with us this morning and
entertaining, wasn't it?
I'm just an old retired guy. I got nothing better to do. You guys are earning your money today. I'll say that.
That's nice of you.
It's been difficult.
The amendment that you have in front of you essentially amends a conservation easement that Stephen and his wife put on their property in 2003. And that conservation easement, of course, restricted any building on the property. There are no residences on this property. Stephen has done a wonderful job restoring this property, which was an old farm, back to natural resources, if you will. So they've done a good job on restoring prairie and managing some woodlands on the property.
You'd have been really popular with the group we had here earlier if we'd have gotten to this right away. Yeah.
That group reminded me of a nightmare we went through in Boone County about 20 years ago. It was a nightmare, but Terry Branstad came to us, put a stop to it. Then. It was right next to Ledges Park, if you can remember.
Oh yeah, I remember that. Okay.
So we're asking for the ability to build, I assume, a shelter.
Build a picnic shelter and a teepee. And Stephen, if you'd like to talk about that, you're more than welcome.
Well, I guess it's been something we've been thinking about for quite some time. And
Mike, pull that closer to him. Okay.
And the idea of the picnic shelter, just to make it a little easier for people who want to use the area, it's open pretty much to neighbors and friends and family in the general area. And it's just going to be an open building, like a typical one you'd find in a park. There would be no power to it or any water or anything like that. It would just be primitive, non-inhabitable. The idea of the teepee, I was going to put it on the end of my prairie. There's about 3 acres of prairie we have there. It's about its 15th year, starting to look like a prairie, finally. And I have a lot of prints and actually posters that were done by Mark Mueller that identify prairie plants and all the ecosystem involved in our prairie. And I like to display these just in this. It's going to be shaped like a teepee. It won't be an inhabitable. It's just going to be a structure mainly to display these items. We live within about a mile of the new Ballard Community School, and I've offered the school the opportunity to use this as an outdoor classroom if they ever so wanted. Nothing has been ever made formal or ever even discussed in a formal way yet, but the option is there for them if they'd like to. It's okay with the family, and I think it'd be a pretty nice place for them to bring kids out and introduce them to that type of stuff.
Very good. Well, we appreciate your commitment to all this. Any questions?
Nope. I would move the amendment for the conservation easement with Mr. Stowell as submitted.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Further discussion? Clinton?
Nope. Aye.
Hoot?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Amendment passes. Thank you very
thank
much.
You thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Appreciate it.
Thank
you. Appreciate it.
Next item is consideration of plans and authorization to solicit bids for phase one of Dakin's Lake expansion, Mike Cox. Let's get to the end of this thing, huh?
Let's get it done.
Absolutely.
Let's get to the end so we can start.
That's right.
So you guys are well aware of what's happening here. You know that we put the whole package, the whole project to bid. Obviously, we didn't award that project. It came in well over what we had available. And so we're going back to the drawing board here, and the best way to get this done is phase the project and move forward with this bid package that would construct all of the lake. It would do all of the rough grading on the site. and it would construct the wetland cells. The other pieces of the project would happen at a later date. Our goal with the phase two would be that we have it packaged up and ready to receive bids on it this coming winter. And then as soon as we're done with phase one, roll into phase two. As you know, when we received those high bids, the lion's share of that overage was due to the subcontractor bidding climate and the buildings. So we've taken that out of here. We do have a cost opinion with this this round, which is roughly $100,000 more than the cost opinion of the same items in our previous bidding effort. Does that make sense to everyone? We learned a few things through that previous bidding. And so our engineers have come back, reevaluated their cost opinion, and so the cost opinion on this one is, like I said, give or take $100,000 more than the same items in phase one. So the Conservation Board at their meeting last night did pass a recommendation to the Board of Supervisors to accept or to authorize going out to bid for this phase one project.
It makes sense to me. I got to go up for coffee at some point last week with our friends up in Ziering. Nice way to start your morning at 6 a.m. And obviously there was lots and lots of concern about what was going on. And so I just took a moment to explain what I think we're trying to do. And I think what Mike has in front of us now is exactly what I've seen as what we're trying to do. Only thing I would encourage, Mike, is let's make sure that that second phase, we're ready to get those bids out when that climate is most favorable. And if that means that it's December when these contractors are looking for their work for the first part of spring, then let's be ready to go and let's not miss an opportunity to get as favorable bids as possible.
And that was exactly a comment from the Conservation Board last night as well, that I think in Shive Hattery's memo here, they talk about January, February letting, and we had the same comment last night that, you know, that might not be the best timing. Let's bump that up a little bit. Good point.
Yeah, well, our goal here has to be the same project that we put out there kind of in one big package, but just doing it piece by piece where we still finish in a very similar time frame, but rather than trying to bid the whole thing, we're going to bid it in pieces and hopefully get a little better prices.
Correct.
So, other questions for Mike?
Yep. I would move approval of authorization to solicit bids for phase one of the Dakins Lake expansion.
Second.
Motion and a second. Further discussion? Toot.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Pass. Mike, thanks. Appreciate all your work on this, man. It sure hadn't been easy. Next item is consideration of account specialist job description for Community Life Program, Ron Christensen and Alyssa Wignall. Ron, you got to sit through all of that. Beginning and the end.
We're not
bookends today.
Oh, sure. There is a job description in front of you. What prompted this? The Community Life Program has a vacant position in their, what you would call their finance department. That was vacated in March. Am I remembering that correctly?
Yep.
Okay. They've also done a lot of work to see what they need as far as billing, budgeting, what they need in their finance department. So when Ron brought this to me, we took the position that's vacated and some of the duties that are being done by someone in a current position and created a new job description, and that's what you have in front of you for the account specialist. And then if this is approved, he would then advertise to hire somebody for the financial data manager with some specific Medicaid billing experience. And if Ron wants to go on a little bit, but that's what they need over in that department.
And the main difference is that our current person in that role really doesn't have the expertise to do our cost reporting, so we contract that out. And we really need a person in that role that can do it in-house.
Yeah.
So to go on, what we did is we worked out and got a job description, and then I take this and I score it on our current compensation schedule. It did score out as a grade 7, and the current salary of the employee that, if the position is approved, that would her position would be reevaluated. Her current salary is within that.
Right, grade 7 range.
Yes, grade 7.
Right. Yeah, just to say, yes, I've been in conversation with Ron throughout the process, and knowing that we were waiting on the finalization of working with Alyssa in terms of the job description and so forth, and then being able to move forward and setting a date. So I think we're at that point based on what we see submitted before us is to move forward. And also the note that this was, again, a recommendation that Arlie Ball, who came in to assist us and as a consultant-type role early on, felt would enhance the overall operation and our ability to make sure that our cost reporting and all those types of things was done. So I would move that we accept the account specialist job description and authorize Ron and Alyssa to advertise for this position.
You have a motion?
Second.
And a second. Further discussion?
This position will not be advertised for, Wayne. This position will be filled internally.
Oh, okay,
yep.
I'm
shifting.
Sorry.
Shifting a person into this position, and then we will advertise for the financial data manager, already an approved position within that department.
But not creating a position, just shifting a position.
There's two positions. There's one vacant right now.
Thanks for the clarification.
The other thing that needs to be pointed out here, if we act in the affirmative on this, it also will be an additional employee action form that was not part of our action earlier today. So just be aware of all that. Any further discussion? Clinton?
Aye.
Toot?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. It passes. Thank you very much. Thanks for your work on this. Next item on the agenda is discussion and consideration of revised Story County travel policy after the 7-day review. And Alyssa and Lucy. Hi, Lucy Martin.
Oh, yeah. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Did you get to sit through much of our earlier stuff? I saw you in and out.
I took a coffee break just to get some for coffee, but I was here for most of it. I will say Ron was very helpful. He was getting chairs and giving up his seat for older members of our audience.
We didn't have quite as many in here as we had for the sesquicentennial celebration, and there was no band. We need to have a band back here behind us. But other than that, it was fairly full today.
We're back today. It's actually been 14 days since we brought the draft updates to the travel policy to the board. I don't know what comments you've received. I received one really good comment, which I would like to read at least a portion of into the record. But just background, our travel policy was 10 years old. We had gotten comments from the state auditor during our annual audit for the last 2 years saying we needed to address the issue of benefits accrued by employees during travel. So we essentially cribbed it entirely from the state of Iowa, added that to the policy. I got a very good comment from Keith Morgan, our emergency management director. He was for many years active in the military, and To summarize his comments, the Department of Defense had a policy that discussed just this issue, and they had such a difficult time actually implementing and enforcing it that they ended up changing it. So, which I found that was interesting that a giant federal organization could not
actually
implement a very sounding policy, but it's the enforcement that's the issue. Just from what Keith said, the process was too difficult to institute and monitor, and they finally ended up allowing the military member to keep any mileage and other benefits that might have been incidental to the travel. Without a central ticketing office for the county, it will be hard to ensure that the cheapest travel accommodation mode for a trip is used. What is going to be the cost of tracking collections of the benefits? What will we do with the benefits we collect? I'd say the best we could do is have the traveler document, they've selected the most cost-effective mode of travel by having them do a screen capture of the website they use to select the flight or to use the screen to justify driving a private vehicle. And then he had provided some information, which I did pass on to you, about, just what the Department of Defense did for use of frequent flyer benefits. Their old rule was that all benefits belong to the government, and if you commingled your benefits, they all belonged to the federal government. Then they changed that rule to saying all benefits belong to the employee because tracking that was just so onerous. Alyssa has found maybe a simpler way to express this in our travel policy. We have responded for 2 years running to the state auditors that we will address this issue in our travel policy. They specifically singled that out. So we want to do that, but we don't want to obviously pass a policy that we have no capacity to enforce in a.
So what you originally what was originally before us was any benefits received from county paid directly or via reimbursement travel cost shall accrue to the county, not the individual. Mm-hmm. Now, has that changed over this 14 days? What you're recommending?
Well, I would recommend that we have to change that or modify it. And I think Alyssa had a simpler way of putting that into the policy.
What I've seen some of the other policies contain, they don't necessarily say they're benefits of the employee because it is paid with public dollars. So the employee probably, these other counties, cities don't feel that the employee should derive benefits from airplane tickets that were purchased with public funds. Since it is hard to track, they just state that the employee cannot utilize any of those benefits. And I think it does say in here that if it is found that the employee utilized those benefits, the employee has to reimburse the county for the amount of that benefit. So if they used frequent flyer miles and bought a $400 ticket, they would reimburse the county for the $400 ticket.
Now, the obvious idea here, though, was if you're going to use the frequent flyer miles, hopefully you would use it for another flight.
Correct.
Of county business.
But there's no policy that says they have to. And,
I see.
And I'll be honest, when I fly once a year.
Yeah.
I don't have frequent flyer miles, and I know a lot of them.
But I do.
Don't want. Well, sure you
and
do.
That's one of the reasons that.
Yep.
I
yep. And if you use it for county.
Right. And most of my frequent flyer miles have been generated over the years through county, travel, and it would certainly be my intent to be able to say if I could get a free ticket or the next time I flew. Then that's less dollars that the county would have to pay. But without having it spelled out in the policy, then I think it's very, we can't really,
But Wayne, even if it is spelled out in the policy, and I appreciate your intentions and your honor in doing that, but even if it is, Wayne Clinton's frequent flyer miles are Wayne Clinton's frequent flyer
my
miles.
Name. Yeah, my
and,
name.
And so, to me, the whole I'm in complete agreement with the idea that county-paid travel, no individual should receive benefit from that. I just don't know how we're ever going to track. Even what you just said, Alyssa, how are we ever going to track whether Wayne Clinton goes and gets a free ticket to go somewhere and part of the miles that he used there came from county-paid travel? I mean, how would we ever know that?
You won't be able to track it unless it's seen on a, they can tell when the claims come through to pay it, your documentation that's submitted to the auditor, it does typically say, this employee has frequent flyer miles with American Airlines. If the county uses, what is it, travel and transport, that's all through, if they use that. There's not a good way to track it, and I think that's why, the state has their policy that says employees just cannot utilize these benefits, and if they find out they have to reimburse. Have they ever found out they utilize? How do they find that out? I don't know.
Well, but my question would be, so I've viewed this policy as kind of the jumping off point. We needed to get this resolved so that we could move on and have the conversation about some kind of county card that was going to be used, in my mind anyway, primarily for travel. It seems to me the way that we could actually police this is say county paid travel will be put on one of these county cards, which then is the county's responsibility. There's no frequent flyer miles accruing anywhere because it's paid by the county card. and we have this conversation sitting there from U.S. Bank and Wells Fargo and maybe others, depending on where this goes. And I was kind of waiting for us to get through this in order to start to have that conversation. Right. But to me, that was the only way that we could possibly hope to police this.
Lisa, the travel's already done through a county credit card.
But the card is still to the individual.
The
card, for example, the way it's stated, I mean, like my card, for example, it has my name.
Uh-huh. It's to the department. It would be the Board of Supervisors.
Or the supervisors. But as far as the mileage, the way the airlines do it, it's secured to me, the individual.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I mean, we don't have a central travel office that makes arrangements.
Right.
That's done at the department level.
Right, because it was too costly.
So it makes no difference what card is used.
Right.
All right.
Him who's on the ticket.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Or who's checking into the hotel room. It would be whatever that rewards is under. So it's very, very difficult to track. I know we've received, and the reason we brought this to the board is we have received comments 2 years in a row from the auditors.
So we'll be talking about putting a policy in, because we need to have a policy that we have no hope or expectation that we'll ever enforce.
Well, we want to, I guess, get to a point where it's, you know, makes sense and is at least somewhat enforceable. Or that we can say to them, this is what we've done. I mean, the fact that the Department of Defense couldn't do this speaks volumes to me.
$300 for a hammer.
Right. Like they're the home of the $900 toilet seat.
The other option is they don't even utilize the frequent flyer for the county travel. You don't have to put it on your frequent flyer.
Yeah,
account,
that's the other option.
Or the hotel, you know, you have to turn that, you know.
But again, we're not going to be able to track that. We're not going to be able to tell. Wayne's an honorable guy. You can trust him to do what
I can tell if he puts it on his frequent flyer miles by his statement that's attached to the credit card statement. Because I think when you print it out, it says however many miles that would accrue with the purchase of that airplane ticket. If he doesn't put in his information stating he has a frequent flyer.
That's right. It wouldn't show up.
It wouldn't show up.
To me, that's a cleaner answer then. Then we're tracking it as we track the claim coming through.
Add that to the travel authorization form that everyone fills out as well.
And I'm not trying to make this more complex.
No.
It's just I don't want to get another comment from the state auditor saying we need to address this for the third time.
I would recommend that you send us back to the drawing board and we'll come to you with a new draft with some workable options.
I'm good with that.
The motion?
I'm good with it, but what is it going to basically change? To me, The statement is there. That's saying that's our policy. Now, whether we enforce it or not, or able to enforce it, is irrelevant. Clearly, that's the policy, and that's what we're trying to do. So we know we're going to expect our employees to not use it, and if we can, through the travel authorization, as she suggested, there's a way to identify, you know, that, or you indicate that you are receiving frequent flyer miles. We would encourage that be added or say that that's part of what is expected. If you're going to receive frequent flyer miles, or you list it on your travel authorization form, I don't know.
I have no idea how the state manages the policy. I just assume they don't accrue any frequent flyer miles or hotel points for any of their travel, and then whoever's doing, you know, whoever works and pays the claim.
I would sooner have a policy that said that as opposed to have a policy that says something that we can't enforce.
This whole that it accrues to the county, that to me is unenforceable, but I think it's perfectly reasonable to say, Wayne, if you're traveling and the county's paying for it, you're not getting frequent flyer miles for it. So, you made a motion
that be included about the miles not
getting credit for miles
or the whatever you get.
Now, what I already have is grandfathered in. I just want to make sure that we understand that. So this would be started from the date.
You know, and I haven't done a lot of research as far as, you know, I know, you know, IRS has specific guidelines of what can be turned over to employees and what's taxable and what's not. I do know if it's charged on a company credit card, the employee can be taxed for those miles.
But as far as our policy,
yeah.
It would not start until we
no.
pass.
So anything in the past, we would not go back. It would be moving on forward. Correct.
In the future.
Yeah.
And so, Paul, before I second it, I want to make sure your motion asks the two of them to go change the language, come back with something that's workable, and bring it back
and enforceable.
To us. And enforceable, bring it back to us. I'll second that. Further discussion.
Aye.
Sanders, aye. Clinton?
Aye.
All right. Thank you, guys. We'll look for this next time.
1 minute.
Yep, you got it.
The other person.
All right. We have no agency reports. We're holding IRVM and environmental health for a day that it is not 12:45. Liaison assignments and committee meeting updates. Anything? Nothing from me. We'll wait just a second and let Wayne get back. Oh, Margaret did?
Yeah. This is
yeah, especially certain, during show and tell.
They already have this
Wayne, we are two liaison assignments and committee meeting updates. Toot and I both passed.
There is a lot more that I want to share. It's mostly based on the organizational meeting of the Central Iowa Community Service. What I will do is maybe defer action and update you a little bit more because I'd like to get a little bit more information from Deb also because of some of the things that did occur yesterday.
How about, Wayne, if we get that on a future agenda when Deb can be here and
exactly.
you and her can update
Great.
Us all the way through?
Will do.
Anything else?
No.
Okay. So we'll get that on a future agenda as Deb's schedule allows. Other reports, Story County Inventory Report, Lisa Markley and Lucy Martin.
I know you all three can read,
we
and
can.
Anybody that you know saw the agenda could probably read. Do you have any questions on this report?
No. It was a treat, as always, to go out and count everything.
It was. And you can ask all of our staff members. They absolutely love being able to get out and do that.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Next item is public forum number 2, comments from the public on items not on this agenda. Board may not take any action on the comments due to requirements of open meeting law, but may do so in the future. Loris? Nope. All right. Announcements from the supervisors. Pass.
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 Next item, Jessica Reynolds, request to go into closed session. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Pursuant to Iowa Code Section 21.5, sub 1, sub C, the County Attorney's Office respectfully requests that the Board of Supervisors enter into closed session to discuss strategy with counsel in matters that are presently in litigation or where litigation is imminent, where its disclosure would be likely to prejudice or disadvantage the position of the governmental body in said litigation.
So moved.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. Toot.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. We'll take a 5-minute recess and then be in closed session. Hey, you got these too, Shell.
And this one.
You erased everything from the whole meeting today. All right, I'll call us back to order in open session, coming out of closed session. Jessica, you want to get us back into open session here?
Yes. It is 1:10 p.m., and we are back in open session. The County Attorney's Office, after closed session, is requesting authorization to sue Nationwide Allied Insurance and their insured James Lindemann and driver Cheyenne Lindemann as discussed in closed session.
So move. Move approval.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Further discussion?
To accept the county attorney's recommendation.
Yep. Clinton?
Aye.
Toot?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Please make it so.
Thank
if
you.
If there's nothing else, motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
We are adjourned. Just because I wanted to do that all day.